You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. President Trump today responded to critics angered by his zero-tolerance immigration policy that separated migrant families at the southern border. The president has signed an executive order stopping the family separations. This climb down reverses the president's stance that he had no authority to stop the separations, which have resulted in more than 2,300 migrant children being taken from their families. Some of those children are now in foster care here in Michigan. We talked with one couple who have fostered three immigrant children. To protect their privacy, we are only using their first names.
I'm Rachel, and I am a foster mother through Bethany Christian Services.
And I'm Adam. I am a foster father, or as they call me, Papa Foster. We've been foster care parents through Bethany for 2 years now.
Just in this past February, we started the transitional foster care program. And those kids, we've had three of them, ages 4, 8 months, and 4.
The younger kids are the kids that you're hearing about in the news. They're the kids that came along with their parents and suddenly at the edge of a new country are torn away from them violently. And they have no idea what's going on. And so in the course of 24, 48 hours, they're in our home. And we don't really know much about them. We know where they came from and their age, their gender, and their name.
Every time we go to the airport to take the child home, the child gets off the airplane, goes with the caseworker, develops that attachment. Although it may only be 20 minutes, the kids are always sitting on the caseworker's laps, you know, being hugged. And then we have to take them away from the caseworker again. And that is always a very hard transition. They typically don't want to leave the caseworker because they just had to transition again. And why do they want to transition to these other strangers that are coming in to take them who knows where?
I don't know if they understand that much. I think that they're coming to terms as four-year-olds with this idea of I'm in a different home and it's an indefinite thing. I can't even fathom how a four-year-old does that. Why am I separated from my parents? Why am I with these strange people who talk different and speak different and eat different than I do? What just happened?
With the first boy that we had, his flight kept getting delayed. So we finally got home, I think at 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. And so we pulled out the Hot Wheels rug and cars, and we just played Hot Wheels until 3 a.m. And so it's just doing what it takes to make them feel comfortable as quickly as possible, because they've been through so many transitions that you just want to make sure they feel safe and like they are at home.
The challenges with these younger children are the challenges that you have with your own younger children. They don't want to go to the bed. They want to play forever. They're picky about what food they eat. The unique challenges are the element of where are my mom and dad?
Where's grandpa? Where's grandma? Where are my siblings? Lots of questions about where they are, obviously. And so that's really hard to explain, especially if their parents are in a detention center. How do you explain that to a four-year-old?
Now with the four-year-old we have now, it must have been that her grandma put her to bed every night. And so each night, I think it reminds her of bedtime with grandma and that grandma's gone. And she will just pop up out of bed. And some sad story will flash across her eyes again and again every night, and it's, I want my grandma, I want my grandma. And it's so hard to tell her each night, I'm sorry, honey, she's not here. It's heartbreaking to see that. But each night we do our best to help her put the pieces back together, to find some sort of comfort. Our daughter helps with that. Eventually she'll run out of tears. But I don't think a four-year-old should run out of tears. Not every night.
So the first time we had to say goodbye was to our four-year-old boy. And I remember that night so vividly. He had to be to the airport by 4 a.m. And so the night before, I said goodbye to him. And I was doing okay. Everything was all right. And then we told our daughter to come and say goodbye and give him a hug. And she gives him a big hug and she just goes, "I love you," and says his name. And then the part that got me the most is he just looked at her and said, "I love you too." Our daughter's name, and in English. And it was just amazing to see that in those 6 weeks, such a bond could be formed between these kids. And that's when I had to run to the basement and start crying. I didn't want anybody to see me, especially our boy, because I didn't want him to think there was anything sad with this, because it's not. It's exciting. And I think one of the most rewarding moments for me has been about a week after he left, we got a phone call from him and his mom, and he wanted to say hi and to thank us.
Time and a time again in the Bible, Jesus in parable and in life comes to doors and knocks and asks, "How have you received me?
When did you see me hungry, thirsty, naked, homeless?" And in the Bible, he asks people and they said, "Well, we never saw you. You never were homeless, naked, hungry." And Jesus says, "Yeah, I was in the least of these." And you need to actively look for the least of these. They're everywhere.
And that's what these kids are. That's what these families are.
Donna Abbott is here with us now. She's the branch director who's responsible for Bethany Christian Services Refugee and Immigrant Programs. Donna, Bethany has such a long history of providing transitional foster care for immigrant kids who come into this country. Tell us, what did your program used to look like? Who are the kids typically ending up in foster care?
We've been providing foster care, transitional foster care programming for children since 2013 for unaccompanied children. Usually those are children who have been separated either at the point of flight or in their journey to the United States. On occasion, they would have been separated from the adult that accompanied them, particularly if the adult wasn't related, compared to now where the majority of the children we have in care are children who have been separated from a parent who was responsible for them up until the point they entered the United States.
So have you seen a marked change since the Trump administration's zero tolerance policy went into effect in April?
Absolutely. You know, we've gone from 10-15% of the children having been separated from, you know, a responsible family member to 90% of the children being separated from primary caregiver, usually a mother or a father.
What's the youngest child you've seen so far?
The youngest child we have in care is 8 months. The oldest child is 17.
Can you give us a sense of numbers? How many children you've had come into foster care just since April?
Throughout the United States, where we have transitional foster care, we have 99 foster home beds available. And those beds are full most of the time right now. And like I said, 90% of those beds are full with children. The average age right now is 7 who have been separated from a parent.
Donna, walk us through, if you could, what happens after that parent and child crosses at the border and they're separated. What happens next, and how is the child connected with Bethany and then into one of these foster home beds?
First of all, that separation moment is critical and can't be, you know, understated. So if the separation wasn't planned and the parent didn't have a chance to give the child permission to go with another adult, to be safe, reassure them that they would make contact with them, if the other adults surrounding the child during that separation couldn't give the child or the parent, quite honestly, reassurance that this is who you would connect with so that we can arrange for you to hear your child, see your child, and understand how your child is doing. And again, the same reassurance given to that child. So that moment's critical in how the rest of the process goes. You know, we have one little boy in care who says, "My dad had his, he was handcuffed and put in a police car." And so he's trying to understand that, right? What happened to my dad? Where's my daddy? Where did they take him to? I think that the numbers and maybe the unexpectedness or the unpreparedness for the zero tolerance policy made it difficult to prepare the adults that are surrounding the children to have a plan for their separation. Though I want to be honest with you, it shouldn't be separation at all. We should not have to be making a plan to separate children from parents who've managed to keep them safe in the country that they fled from to their presentation at the border. We should be talking about everything we can do to keep children and parents together.
Donna, we've all seen the government released images of these detention or holding centers for children, the old Walmart, for instance, along the border. So you have youngsters going there and then they get out to foster beds like that you offer. How does that happen?
Some of those children will come to foster homes and some of those children will stay, you know, at the Walmart until they're either deported or another maybe family member is found for them. So they're not necessarily all moved into foster homes. First of all, there hasn't been enough foster homes. I mean, it's a program that's designed to care for children who are separated from their caregiver prior to leaving or on flight. Those numbers are much smaller than when you're thinking of separating children from their parents. That greatly increased the number of children who needed foster homes. And so we're trying to respond as quickly as we can, but recruiting, training, licensing foster homes takes time.
It's not just, hey, by the way, we have a bed, they're welcome to come stay.
Or we have an extra 200 beds or whatever, they're welcome to come stay. If we had the 200 beds, we'd be offering them in a minute. But we have available every possible bed that we have right now, and we want to increase that capacity. It just isn't going to be immediate.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around what it must be like to be a small child. You're separated from your parent, put on a plane, and sent somewhere to a different state and have to move in with strangers, with this foster family. How are these kids responding once they get to their foster homes?
We put a lot of effort into training foster parents to be trauma-informed so that they, you know, watch for the symptoms that you would expect of children. Our foster parents learn to be able to identify when a child is having a nightmare, waking up at night. How do I comfort that child when they're asking for mama and papa and I can't even answer where mama and papa is? How can I provide a safe environment? Children will be watching. Do I get meals at the same time every day? Do I go to school when someone knocks on the door and I don't know them, will you keep me safe? So the child is trying to judge their environment, and often they're super alert, right? They're every noise, everything that's new or different, they pay attention to ascertain if that's safe. Once that trust is established, then the child can start talking a little bit more about their experiences, and they can turn to the foster parent more frequently and with reliability for the kind of comfort that they would turn to a parent for. But quite honestly, you know, these are foster parents who are prepared to help children who have no choice but to be separated from their parent. The flight, the war, you know, the natural disaster, whatever created that separation was unavoidable. But in this situation, they're dealing with children that were purposefully separated from their parents at our border. And that's really difficult for a foster parent to see a child suffering from that separation when they think that that was avoidable.
Donna, I'm wondering, when the children are in foster care with Bethany, what kind of contact do kids have with their parents? I mean, do you know who their parents are, even where they're being held? How do you figure all that out?
Yeah, it takes time to figure out where their parents are. Sometimes the children come with that information, but there's also a number of times they come with no information other than we know what state they cross the border in. So we start calling the detention centers in that state and trying to connect the child with the parent. Sometimes the parent has been able to give the child information somehow, right? Write it on a quick piece of paper. We had one little boy that had his dad's belt in his hand, and written inside the belt was dad's name and phone number. Parents worldwide, right? When you fear separation from your child, you do whatever you can as quickly as can to give that child something to hand over to the next responsible adult to say, this is where my dad or my mom is. Help me get back there.
So Donna, your transitional foster care, where do these youngsters go after transitioning out of your foster care?
So previous to, you know, the zero tolerance policy, children were reunited with what they call sponsors, but usually it is a family member. So we would assess that family member for the safety and appropriateness to care for the child and make a recommendation for reunification to DHHS, who would make the ultimate decision. Now, if the child isn't returned home to the parent, transitional foster care can become long-term foster care, right? So, you know, then they could stay in care for months or years. Right now, we're trying to reunify a young boy who's been in care now for 8 months, who got separated from his father 8 months ago. His father was deported, and so we're trying to get him back into his father's care in the country of origin. And it's taken us 8 months to do that. So we're hoping soon he'll be reunified. Not having children travel with parents makes things much more complex. We're talking about across, you know, national borders. We're talking about families needing to assess their safety, where they're at in their current country. So families have difficult decisions to make. And now with a new policy that says every adult member of a household is fingerprinted, and that fingerprint is turned over to ICE. That means now families have to determine if there are unauthorized members in that household. Does it put those members of that household at risk if they come forward to try to take custody back of their child?
The former acting director of ICE, who served under President Obama, is warning that we could very well see kids permanently separated from their parents. John Sandweg told NBC News that a parent can move very quickly from detention to deportation, but a child's case for asylum could take years. And so you could have parents winding up back in their home countries trying to find children who are here in the U.S., and they never get connected. How prepared are you for that to happen to these children that you've seen coming since the zero tolerance policy in April?
Our, you know, whole goal for the program always has been to reunite children with parents or reunite them with a family member who can provide for them, you know, grandma, grandpa, aunt or uncle. And so to have children remain in foster care long term or to be permanently separated from their parents isn't been the goal. And it certainly isn't something Bethany would like to see happen to a child whose parent is able to care for them. And when you separate, like you said, there's separate deportation, they can lose contact. Maybe something happened to mom or dad in that deportation, and we may never know that, nor may the child. And so I think the potential when you separate large numbers of children from families is that you have permanent separation. It's just so early on, it's hard to predict how many children that'll happen to, but I think it's a fair statement to say with the number of children we're talking about that permanent separations will happen.
Donna Abbott, Bethany Christian Services, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.